When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Icarus, the Reality with Shane Jones.
What is up, inquirers, and welcome to the expanse of deep, open-minded conversation. I'm the one they call Shane, and today for you guys, we have somebody who has spent more time than I could even fathom researching what the possible history of the Earth could be. So today, he lays it all out, presentation style, diving through it for at least the old half of the possible history of the Earth. And I think you guys are definitely going to enjoy this. It gets you into a lot of really obscure slash occult type concepts, but if you guys sit back and listen, I think you guys will be able to keep up with it. Before we get into this fascinating show, we of course have to do news and updates and front of house. Really looking forward to the next event is Squonkapalooza will be August 10th in Johnstown, Pennsylvania from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. It is free for all ages, of course. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be games, food, vendors, crafts, goods, entertainers, artists, cosplay, contests, and more. And of course, I will be speaking at that event, so that one will be a lot of fun. So make sure you guys mark your calendars and don't forget to attend that one. And as far as front of house goes, if anyone has an encounter that they would like to report, you guys can report those to omm encounter reports@outlook.com. No matter how big, no matter how small, I definitely want to collect them and be able to hear about them and possibly read them on the show if you guys are okay with that. And if you guys enjoy this show, please don't forget to check out my other show, Bizarre Encounters, and our YouTube/Patreon show, Bizarre Inquiries. And for that one, of course, we always take in listener questions, so don't forget to submit those listener questions so we can get that one up and rolling again, of course, too. And if anybody wants to support the show, you guys can do so through the Patreon. Always updating and changing it over there, trying to figure out exactly what you guys need. I've had a big drop as far as Patreon members go, so hopefully we can build those numbers back up. And the second way is through the OMM merch store. Over there, I'll be dropping a bunch of new designs that I've been working on recently. I'll start dropping them off one by one, of course, on the merch store, so don't forget to go and check that out over there. And if you guys don't mind leaving a review or rating for the show on iTunes or Spotify, I would definitely appreciate it. I love being able to read the 5-star reviews on the show, so if anybody leaves any of those, of course I will read it on the show and give you guys a big shout out. And to stay up to date on Inquiries of All Reality and Open Minds Media, you guys can check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Discord, YouTube, and TikTok. And every single thing that I mentioned is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show.
Thank you.
Please welcome to the show, researcher slash hobbyist, Ari Asulin. How's it going today, man?
Howdy, doing great.
Absolutely. Pleasure to have you on the show, man. I'd seen you bouncing around for a while on Instagram, and then you emailed me saying that you got kicked off of Instagram, so that's ended up how we ended up setting up this show, so...
Right. That was fun. Back and forth.
But I guess a good spot for at least getting into the Instagram and everything, and it'll kind of lead way into all your work and the research you do. First and foremost, it's always interesting why people get kicked off of Instagram. So you got to tell everybody why you got kicked off of Instagram and then tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and a little bit about what you do.
Thanks. My name's Ari Asulin, basically a hobbyist researcher since about 2011. And I research pretty much any conspiracy, and I have a website, conspiracy repository, where I try to collect as much information, documentation, and theories and conclusions as I can. I guess the only real difference between me and other sites and projects that are similar is I really try to get down to the conclusion. I try not to stop at anything that I would consider magic. Like magic to me is the bad word. It's like nothing that's used to be considered magic isn't understood today. And the same policy applies to conspiracies. If something seems like it's magic, there's probably just a little bit more to figure out. You know what I'm saying? That kind of thing.
Oh yeah. So, I've said that a million times on the show, that it's just a matter of understanding, and then magic turns into a science. And the example I always throw is alchemy into chemistry. I mean,
exactly. And as far as why I got kicked out, since about 2011, I noticed that there's just a whole category of things that are forbidden on social messaging, or media, I should say. And, it really drew me into those categories to start researching them when I realized how banned they were. And I mean, automatically banned. I mean, like if you show Hollow Earth picture on Facebook, you just get this warning saying that you're spreading propaganda, or you're Russian propaganda, or, you know, inciting hatred and racial hatred even. And it's just like, whoa, I'm not doing that. You know, I'm really just looking at an option, possible alternate to this flat earth stuff that we keep hearing about, you know? So it's just like, one thing is totally allowed and the other thing is totally banned. And for that reason, it drew someone like me, who's normally not really interested in these things, into actually researching them as much as I could. So that's how I got here.
Dude, it's all one-sided, man, because it's obviously a controlled narrative. So they try to do what they can to push it into the perspective they want people to have. But it's kind of funny that we live in a society nowadays where it's like, we're all about this freedom to do whatever you want. But if you have an opinion different than mine, then that's a no-go. We're not going to play that shit no more.
Absolutely. Yep, that's true.
But kind of digging into some of your research, too. I don't know how dark you necessarily go with your research, or... where you necessarily like to go as far as like what type of conspiracies you like to research, but why don't you let the listeners know a little bit about what type of conspiracies you really dive into?
You bet. Until the last couple of years, until about 4 or 5 years ago, I wouldn't say I really had anything solid to do any research on, but since then a lot of information has come out on Tataria, and I'm sure you've seen a little about that, because I saw one of your episodes about Tataria. Essentially, it's that weird Russian empire that appears to have existed in history until it was completely erased from history, leaving behind like fractures and pieces of itself, and a bunch of people around the world claiming that that empire is actually theirs, you know, from the French or Spanish or British Empire. And so that theory is actually quite fresh, because in 1990s would somebody actually come out with a challenge to the existing timeline chronology that we've all been taught in schools, that the world more or less has accepted, the one that Joseph Scaliger of the Catholic Church essentially compiled and then mass distributed, and then we all teach it. So in Russia, a guy named Anatoly Fomenko in the 1990s did a mathematical analysis of all texts available. Didn't leave anything out. He went through the Bible, other holy texts. He went through government documents, especially Russian stuff found in the Kremlin. And he went through like New York Times posts, just everything that had dates on it, moon calendars, and sightings like comet sightings, stuff like that. And he basically came up with a mathematical proof, essentially, as far as math can prove anything, that somebody had fudged with our timeline that we know, that they literally stretched it, splintered it into pieces, duplicated those pieces, and spread it all out through thousands of years of alleged human history even to go as far as saying that there's been 100,000 years of human anthropological history. So like I said, that theory is pretty fresh 90s. And then in 2015, about 14, when we started having a conflict with Russia, we being the United States and the West, Russia considered its culture under attack and started releasing all these maps of Tataria. And it was kind of weird that a Russian government would actually endorse something that is still widely considered to be a pseudo historical conspiracy. But these maps, they said they got them at the Kremlin. They are available, and it's part of their history, where this Russian empire existed. If you want, I can share my screen. I got some media that kind of illustrates my point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Go for it. Let me make sure you got permission real quick, and then it should be all good.
All right, you should be able to see my website.
Yep, popping up.
This is Paradigm Threat, the web.net, the website that I work on. I also have .com.org. But my main article is the chronology tab, which I've just been adding to for about 3 years. And my objective is to come up with a complete timeline of human and Earth history, all of it, from beginning, from first memory all the way till today. And what started me on this project was a simple realization that it could be done. Until now, what we were taught in history was that it's so splintered over so many millions or billions of years that you could never cope with a timeline, except for one that has vague causality, saying, and then billion years passed and this ocean disappeared and these mountains appeared. I mean, there's no way for uniformitarian theory, which as it's called, known, to actually prove any of its theories, because you have to wait billion years to see if it's true. So when I found out that there was a new chronology, and a couple of years prior to that, I also found out that the old Earth timeline is also majorly in question now. That's nothing, it's not settled science by a long shot. These are hotly debated topics. I remember in the 90s, they even went to the schools and debated this topic. Was there dinosaurs or not? A bunch of Christians showed up, a bunch of creationists came to debate. I saw it on the closed circuit TV as well. And they basically were arguing between young Earth and ancient Earth. You know, the teachers in school, 4.5 billion year old Earth, 13.8 billion year old universe, because they're so sure that the universe had a start and that it's that old. I mean, these are major leaps of faith. This might as well just be called another religion, even a sci-fi religion, that's what I would say. But they teach in school as a fact. And kids then have to decide if they're going to accept the cosmology taught in school or the one taught in church. And neither of them really add up. Neither of them are very convincing. They have a lot of contradiction. So the old timeline was called into question in the 60s, actually many times in history, but in the 60s, a big shot named Emmanuel Velikovsky basically called the whole thing out, saying, look, it's not ancient history, it's young Earth, and it's actually all the events of the Bible can be described as interplanetary cataclysm between planets, and not necessarily the perspective written down in the Bible, where everything is the will of one God, the invisible creator God of the universe. In that perspective of the Old Testament, it's very easy to understand how people back then could have gotten some of these things wrong. First of all, they couldn't see any stars out there, so you know, there weren't many stars recorded in the creation events. Just like there's no angels in the creation event. There's a lot of things missing in the creation event that the Bible does not describe when people first saw stars, for example. And according to Velikovsky and many other authors that believe in this young Earth theory, the origin of Earth happened rapidly. It happened cataclysmically and involved this perfect period called the Golden Age, where the planets were all in one line in a collinear configuration connected to our sun. And a ton of energy was passing through it. This theory is known as Saturnian cosmology. And I won't jump into all of these theories. I'm just going to mention that they exist. I have links on my website to a bunch of authors who go into great detail. And I'd recommend watching some videos from Wallace Thornhill, especially. He's a guy in the late 90s who came up with some plasma physics-backed theories to how this young Earth Saturnian cosmology could have actually occurred. So back to the story. The people that wrote the Old Testament did not know that the universe was bigger than our solar system. And they called the solar system the universe. It was the same thing. and they thought that one of the gods, one of the planets, had created everything in the creation story, because that god was constantly appearing in the North Pole of the Earth at all times. During the Golden Age, if you looked up the North Pole, you would see Saturn as a big round sphere with no rings yet. And in front of it, you'd see Venus as a star-shaped figure that constantly changes shape. In front of that, you'd see a red circle of Mars. And this is planets all in one collinear configuration with Jupiter and then the Sun behind it, but you can't see those yet. So people saw this and they said, well, that's God. You know, not just Saturn, but all three of them together. They represent a triform God, a three-part God, Trinity, whatever you want to call it. And they simply wrote down that this God had created the Earth and the people and everything. So so what do I believe happened? Well, in Saturnian cosmology, there are no gods necessarily. They're just planets. So there's no will to create. There's no creation will event. There's not like something, you know, what's the word? From nothing. I forget the Latin term for that.
Something from nothing? Or is that what you're talking about? Like that phrase?
Yeah.
I can't create something from nothing.
Right. Ex nihilo. There we go. I got it. Ex nihilo. From nothing. That whole concept is not accurate. There was definitely something before the Big Bang of our solar system, before the first memory, before recorded history ever started. The universe was still there. And there's many other solar systems out there with life cycles. And our solar system had also gone through entire cycles with other planets. All those planets would die off at some point, and our solar system would become ripe to host new planets. Just like a bird's nest, you know, sometimes bird's nests were used by birds. But often a bird will build a bird's nest, put all its eggs in there, birds will hatch and get too big for the nest, and the parent will actually push them right out. They'll say, get out of here, you know, don't, you're not going to survive if you stay here, and there's not enough room anymore. So the exact same thing happens in nature.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we are back, so let's hop right in.
The Big Bang, essentially, is when Saturn and the Sun connect, and Saturn contains all of the mass of all of the planets at once, including the gas giants Jupiter, Venus, Uranus, Neptune. You know, and as they connect, Saturn's this brown dwarf drifting through space, they connect and Saturn explodes. You know, all these planets form in a configuration. Every civilization on Earth sees this happen, and some of them go into great detail, like Greek/Roman. They talk about Kronos slash Odin and how this god essentially birthed, you know, thousands of children. And then Kronos gobbles up the children and eats them up. And then the biggest god, Zeus, rips through its belly and all the children are free again. These Greek myths are very confusing and contradictory and can't relate them to anything we see today. But back then, this is simply what they saw happen. They saw even the Earth get gobbled back up into Saturn in some sort of reverse polarity event. And then when it was full, once again, it would just explode again, and all of those planets would come out, and Saturn would drift to the outer atmosphere and become the gas planet we know today, with all that debris floating around it, which became the rings. So again, why am I so certain about this theory? And why is it like, you know, better than other theories. We got so many these days, you know, aside from flat earth, you got, you know, simulation theory, you know, there's all kinds of stuff out there that could possibly explain myths and stuff. Well, I'm sure because the science adds up, and I'm really focused on the science and it, stuff that could be demonstrated in a laboratory and nothing less. In this case, when it comes to the connection between Earth, Mars, Saturn, and a few other planets, there is absolutely a connection. One of them is the axial tilt. You can see this on many graphs. For whatever reason, statistical coincidence, a one in a billion chance, all of these planets have the exact same axial tilt. This could only have happened if they all shared the same tilt in the past and became blown apart at some point. Otherwise, like I just said, it would be in the billions, in the trillions, that kind of coincidence. Another coincidence that we see on the moon's surface and on Mars' surface are craters that are always perpendicular, always normal lines to the surface. That's impossible. It's impossible that every single crater hit at a normal perpendicular line. And even more impossible, sometimes you see bullseye craters within craters. So there's something going on with these craters. They're not asteroids. They're not previous collisions from uniformitarian theory over billions of years. These are lightning scars. And lightning and plasma were the predominant energies of our solar system's origin. Constantly in the sky, constantly zapping between planets, discharging uneven energies at different amplitudes and voltages, and essentially causing all the cataclysms of the early myths that we know. So about the creation story, because this is one that I like talking about. There aren't many authors that talk about this part at all. The scientific authors like to state a science, and they don't like to speculate as to how exactly the first life forms formed on Earth. But we have a lot of stories that sort of describe exactly how this is possible. One of them is the in Jewish mythology, we got the golems. These are creatures that were invented essentially through alchemy, through clay and gold and stuff, and given souls just by using alchemy. They appear in myth, in science fiction, of course, like in The Hobbit. Not the character golem, but the giant rock creatures that appear in the mountains. Those are golems, as described in mythology correctly. And what happened in the early stages of Earth's history during the Golden Age, when all of the life forms spawned, was they essentially spawned as golems, as creatures of rocks and clay. No organs, no lungs, no eyes, no ears, no mouth. And they were kept alive by that tremendous energy just flowing through the configuration. Some areas had more energy, like Mars, the North Pole of Mars, tremendous amount of energies, and gems and emeralds would grow out of the ground, and they could be carved into cities, and there was Atlantis up there. And other places just had giant humans and giant creatures of all kinds. And they were kept alive, like I said, by just energy flowing through them. They eventually came to want to consume other creatures, to take their energy in. And if you believe in DNA, which I do not, this would be how the creatures all established DNA in the first place, by eating each other. It's not like they tell us through evolution. It's literally by consuming a more complicated life form within, and then not having a stomach yet, and then sort of merging into a new sort of golem creature. Over about 800 years of Golden Age, these creatures evolved everything else that they needed, including organs, eyes, even wings. Like, you know, humans have those bones for the wings. And we do know that fairies existed, because there's plenty of literature that says so. Even skeletons, even though it's been highly debunked, but still, you know, something that you just have to look at the science of it. During this Golden Age, anything could exist because there was very low gravity and very high energy. There's almost no way to die. You couldn't get killed. If something was to stab you, you would just sort of mutate into something else. It says, again, in many different literatures, like Hindu literature, that death was simply not known yet. So death basically came at the end of the Golden Age, at the end of the 800 years, each year lasting 225 days, not as slow an orbit as we have yet today. And like I said, they saw up in the sky at all times this godlike sphere. They worshipped it as many names. One of the names is Baal. You know, we've all heard that name, Baal. Early Babylonian worship, the type of god that people sacrificed animals and humans to. that's named after a ball. You know, there's a connection there. Like, you know, I ever heard of how people say that baseball is actually named after Baal. It's just the same word. It's because the first god that was ever seen on Earth appeared like a giant ball in the sky.
You're just changing the L and an A, swapping that. That's it.
Exactly. Giving an exalted set kind of sound. Aal ended up being a sound you hear in Jewish literature all the time. In fact, Saturn is known as El in the Old Testament. And I was raised Jewish, and we were constantly told not to name the name of God. So we're also told that one of the names is El. And my name, Ariel, I'm actually named after God because it's Lion of God, Ariel. So I've been very familiar with this term. I just never understood that El was actually just referencing this planet this whole time. And that the Jews actually in the early periods did not worship El. They worshiped Baal. That's in 70 AD when they lost that first temple. What was the second temple? Lost the second temple. They were Baal worshippers at that point. You know, that's not controversial. That's known. So anyway, Golden Age seemed perfect. Here's Wallace Thornhill's model of a collinear configuration of planets. And he's explaining it as a vortex of energy, keeping them all in line, just like eggs in a vortex of water. Essentially came to an end. Yeah, so the nine planets were known as a Yggdrasil tree, right? The tree of life. Each location was named in Norse mythology, and each location had certain features to it, either too hot, too cold, you know, really bright, really dark, that kind of thing. Then there was also this Absu layer, this plasma layer that came from Saturn that still surrounded the Earth, and it was seen in the sky, especially in the southern hemisphere. And it was known as the abyss, as the firmament, and it does appear in the Bible. No, a lot of flat earthers cite the firmament as proof that the Earth is flat, but what they're not understanding was that the Bible mentioned the firmament back then. Did not say it still exists today. It's gone now. You don't see it in the sky anymore. But in those days, many, many references from many civilizations seeing these layers in the sky. Literally all the way up until about the 18th century, actually, when the final rings disappeared. So, northern configuration, as I mentioned, Mars, Venus, Saturn, Jupiter, and the Sun. Southern configuration is very interesting. That's Mercury, Neptune, and Uranus, creating the first man myth of the southern hemisphere of South America, and actually of Africa, too. We just don't know much about African religions because they were completely systematically wiped out by the French and British empires, those Jesuits and all those missionaries. But this first man figure is what I'm talking about. It actually created many figures in the sky, shapes in the sky, and one of them was a human shape, just completely naturally. But by making these three points, this shape appeared with arms and a head and legs, and this shape regarded gravity, the gravity of the Earth, the gravity of electromagnetic induction as it connects to the Earth as a cathode. So that first man shape, as it appeared in the sky for 100 years, literally created all of the first men and women of the Earth. Men first, because women only differ from men from their ability to reproduce, and that organ simply hadn't come yet. which is why then, later on, Westerners, who disregarded Southern religions entirely, misunderstood the myth and said that was Adam and Eve, but they still kept the part where Adam created Eve out of his rib. So that's like the first man figure coming to pieces, falling to the earth, and creating men and women. It didn't necessarily create just the woman, Eve. It created all women and all men, that kind of thing, over a long period of time during the entire Golden Age, which the Bible shrinks into just the Garden of Eden. But then it gets the next event quite right. The next big event is the Dark Ages, when the Golden Age suddenly abruptly ends. The planets have become too big. They consume too much energy within them. They became like capacitors. They're overcharged, very hot, and their electromagnetic fields start reversing. And they push themselves out of the collinear configuration, and they turn into a nonlinear configuration where all the planets rotate around each other, and that thing rotates around the sun. Not yet the orbits we know today, but something new. So as I said earlier, we saw that Cronus went nuts, Saturn went nuts and devoured all the planets. Saturn also, as Earth passed through its layers, caused three great deluges, which also made it into the Bible. This is where Earth gets all of its water, and the water of the Earth has salt in it, and we don't know where the salt comes from. There's no source found ever in our oceans. But it just so happens that the water salt ratio, hydrogen salt, is exactly the same ratio as found in Saturn's rings today. So again, another perfect match, impossible statistical coincidence. Moving on. In the Dark Ages, all this energy shifts its position. It used to be in the north areas of the planet, in Atlantis and all those areas. Atlantis comes apart, falls into the Earth. As we all know, everyone knows Atlantis falls, right? It's kind of gone forever, and people start building all these pyramids all over the Earth, not just in Egypt, but everywhere in the equatorial hemisphere zone. And why they do this? Well, the pyramids all conduct energy. Not so much today. Today they're mostly just hunks of concrete because energy is different today. We're not in this dark age anymore. But back then, all you need to do is build something out of concrete and it would start conducting the massive energies flowing through our solar system. These energies and the conductions between them were so strong, they're quantum conductions essentially, that they allowed people to use these pyramids to communicate to each other, thus creating the first empire on Earth. Empire meaning spanning, using technology and information, and controlling each region with religion and so forth. And this pyramidal empire was remembered as the first real religion, the first empire, the first church in the world. In ancient Egypt, in the Exodus story, the Egyptians are all worshiping various gods in the pyramid. And the pyramid ends up being, and they say that these gods, these idols essentially can speak to you and they can heal you. And they have features. So why do they think that? Because when energy flowed through the pyramids and when these idols were placed in the most central locations, which have no hieroglyphics on the walls, people still don't understand what those chambers are in the pyramids today. No hieroglyphics, no tombs, right? So what are they then? Well, they were conducting chambers. The energy would have to be perfect. Hieroglyphics on the wall would actually disrupt the energy flow, would create artifacts in it. And suddenly the picture, the voice wouldn't be as clear. Telepaths wouldn't be able to use it as easily. And then finally, the big awesome feature of these pyramids is they could, you can teleport through them. These chambers actually allowed teleportation, as mentioned in the Bible as the Ark of the Covenant, and in the Egyptian mythology as the boat of Ra, which allowed Ra to teleport between planets or planes, as it said. Okay, I'm moving ahead here. I thought I had a picture of the Ark video, but I didn't upload that yet. So yeah, that's the Dark Ages. Yeah, got any questions yet? I know I'm kind of jumping ahead here.
Oh no, you're good, man. I'm just sitting back and taking in the information, and mind blown already, man. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, there's a lot there. You know, it's a whole curriculum's worth.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. Hey guys, I know nobody really wants to listen to ad breaks on podcasts, so instead of actually listening to those, why don't you go and check out some of the sponsors and affiliate links for the show instead? Number one, you guys can go and check out I Know Squatch for all of your Squatchy gear needs, or you guys can check out CryptoTology for all of your wearable cryptid favorites, or you guys can check out Snarly Yao for a fantastic natural line of beard oil, beard balm, beard shampoo, and body wash, all with an enticing woodsy aroma of smoky cedar with a hint of mint. And he also puts on a lot of fantastic events around the West Virginia area. So if you guys are in that area, make sure you guys go and check it out and see what kind of events he's putting on, because he definitely brings in an awesome group of people. And you guys can go and check out Big Ape Threads for all of their Bigfoot and cryptid related designs. And going into the affiliate links, you guys can always go and check out the newest sponsor to the show, Organite, specializing in scale model pyramid replicas, EMF protection devices, and much more. And if you guys find any pieces that you guys want to scoop for yourself, you guys can use code OMM for 10% off at checkout. And to all the paranormal investigators out there, you guys can go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. My absolute favorite. I use it every single time I go out. And if you guys have any technical questions about it, you guys can always go and hit up Barry over there in Dimension Devices on Instagram. He's the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions for it. And if you use the affiliate link, you guys will receive 10% off at checkout. And just a heads up, the company is based in the UK, so when you check it out on the website, it will be in pounds. But when you guys use PayPal, it will convert over. So don't think that you guys can't scoop one just because you don't live in the UK. And don't forget to check out the affiliate link for Sticker Mule to receive a $10 credit towards your first purchase. Over there, you can get a bunch of stickers printed, t-shirts, posters, all that kind of stuff. So
If you guys are another podcast and you guys are looking for good quality stuff in order to print your logos on, Sticker Mule is definitely the place for you.
And more information on all of those, of course, is available down in the show description. Let's quickly run through some commercials and get back into the show.
And we are back, so let's hop right in.
So Venus, Planet Venus, was a big plasmoid, had no rock in it. So you know that show, Third Rock from the Sun? It's actually lying about Venus. Venus is not a rock. It's just a big gas giant. Or a great gas dwarf, sorry, I should say gas dwarf. And they insist that's a rock because today it has a spherical shape. But back in the past, it was known as the dragon, or as Medusa with the many heads. Or during the Golden Age, it was known as its better version, as a big star in the sky and the ghost of Holy Ghost of the Trinity and various things. But during the Dark Ages, things really start to come apart. And Venus, the plasmoid of Venus, spreads its energy in all directions, grasping at anything nearby, having conflicts with Mars, with Earth. And at some periods, they saw extended conflicts between Mars and Venus, where Venus would literally rip the surface off of Mars and drag it down. And then it would end in the piece, and both planets would come apart again and reform into themselves. Completely hard to understand today why they would write these myths down without understanding all of these physics was based on electric universe theory, plasma physics, where everything is based on the polarity of the matter, whether it's charged positive or negative, and gravity is nothing more than an artifact of electromagnetism. It's not the main force in the universe, and it's not the main factor in any of this cataclysm. So that's why we're not seeing like just gravity stuff. We're seeing, fire and brimstone and cataclysm. So Jupiter, during the Dark Ages, was remembered as this big fire on top of a mountain. And you might hear the reference to fire on the mountain many times, even Grateful Dead. You'll see it all over the place. This was just a moment in our history when Jupiter started receiving way too much energy, having formed its own electromagnetic field and from the sun. And it's on fire all the time. It became the burning bush on the mountain. And the in the Exodus story, Jupiter and Venus play a major role in why the Exodus happens. I mentioned this Egyptian empire, which Egypt is just a word for the empire. You know, Egypt is not really a place. So at the time, it meant the entire pyramidal empire. And that whole empire it came apart during the Exodus event. This is something that most of the world also remembers, especially in Africa, where if you went to Africa in the 19th century, you might actually find a bunch of people that still followed the Passover tradition. And I know this because many of them were evacuated to Israel, and I was told this story as a kid. So the only thing is about the Exodus story is if you know the versions of the Old Testament and how it's based on different sources, A through F, and how like many of those sources have been called into question in 2015, you know, D, E, F sources are now highly dubious, and A, B, C are now being looked at. Those kind of things mean that the religious foundation for Judeo-Christianity is really fragile and weak. And it's almost entirely based on the Crusaders' ability to just conquer the world over the last 600 years and just spread this version of religion everywhere they could. It's not really based on anything that solid. For example, it's full of contradiction, like I said. And when it comes to the Exodus story, the contradictions are eye-opening and mind-boggling. In the first version of Exodus, there is no Moses. He's simply not a character in the story. And yet, all the other characters are there. Joshua is the main character who leads the Israelites all the way to the Promised Land. God is in the story, and he talks directly to the reader and says, I have parted the sea, the Red Sea, and I have delivered the people, and so forth. Some parts are different. Like the Israelites never go into the water, into the parted of sea. You know, that's a major embellishment that someone came up with in the 19th century. Very clever, but it's not in the version A. So the most important thing is that Moses is missing. And Mo-Zeus is simply just a renaming of Zeus. It could say that this must have occurred during the Greek occupation of Jewish culture when they were stuck in the East between 12th century until the 18th century. And they adopted almost 50% of their Hebrew letters from Cyrillic, from ancient Greek. So no doubt they took a lot of stuff from the Greeks at this time. And most likely this character Mo-Zeus, I should say, is nothing more than the Old Testament believers who follow the Ten Commandments, trying to implement Ten Commandments. Yeah, I'm a programmer. You know, I talk like a programmer, right? So I see everything as interfaces and just logic. So when I say implement the Old Testament, it sounds weird, I know, but they're just trying to follow that first commandment. And first commandment says, do not put any of those other gods before me, which is really funny because it's like, oh, excuse me, God, you're saying there are other gods, right? You're saying it in the sentence. You should have been more like, there are no other gods but me. That would have been a much cleaner first commandment. But this other version, this one that leaves open the possibility for other gods and does not tell you what to do about them aside that you're not allowed to know anything about them. Do not worship them. That's just like a crazy self-defeating commandment that you can see how caused so much mayhem within religion as they're trying to implement this. And so they're trying to say that whatever happened in the Exodus event must have been God's will. There's no way that God was punishing the Israelites for nothing. He must have been delivering them to the promised land. And so they added this character Zeus in there because ever since their first church fell, Atlantis. I know it's weird to hear about Jews from Atlantis, but I consider a Jew anyone that's a monotheist, anyone who believes that Saturn is the only creator of the universe, and that follows that first commandment and the others. That's a monotheist, and they certainly existed in Atlantis. When their creator came down, he reappeared in another form, the savior of Jupiter, as I mentioned with the Cronus story. And then when Jupiter went down, there was another savior, Venus. So in this Exodus story, let me get ahead a little bit here. Venus streaks across the sky, and all of the slaves of the Egyptian Empire see this happen. All of the priests see it happen too, and they're baffled. They don't know why the triform god just came apart. Osiris of the Egyptian Empire just came apart into at least one other piece. They couldn't predict this, and the people said, look, you priests don't have this right, and we're not going to listen to you anymore about heaven, hell, baptism, circumcision, a whole bunch of stuff that the priests just sort of slip under the rug under their authority that they say is given from this Old Testament creator god, which people are now seeing come apart. So the Exodus story, which everyone saw, that it wasn't just a Jewish story, signifies the end of monotheism on earth for a very long time, the end of empires, the end of worshiping Saturn, which started becoming notorious and hated upon anyone who would do that for a long time. And as a lot of people didn't have the R in their vocabulary, like British, for example, they just started calling them Satan worshipers, those Saturn worshipers. And it went underground after this Exodus story. So when the Jews remember the Exodus story as a time when God saved them, version A of the Exodus story says something entirely different. And it makes Joshua the main character delivering the people to the new land. Moses never makes it to Israel. And let's see, I lost my train of thought there. Okay, so what was happening here? Venus was gobbled up by Jupiter during the Dark Age after a bunch of that cataclysm I mentioned. And things seemed stable for a while. But when it came apart, the priest admitted that they had no idea how to predict these gods any further, and that the gods were sort of receding into the outer solar system, into their final orbits, which means essentially that they're harder to see now. They're just specks of light in the sky. It's much harder to even point them out and say, we need to worship that. There's Saturn and there's Jupiter. It's like, forget it. All these religions went underground, and they sort of had to be brought back later in modern human history by that Tartarian Empire, who for no other reason decided to start teaching about everything, all of the gods and all of the history. So let me get a little bit more ahead to that. Every time these cataclysms happen, these major events, which in the Bible are known as creation events, and Saturnian cosmology, they're just major moments of cataclysm when things shift very suddenly and lastingly. And every time these things happen, the calendar gets longer. More days are added to the calendar. And it finally, at this point in time, around 1492 BCE, which is when the Exodus event happened, the calendar actually got to about 365 days. So they had to just remake the calendar every time. This is why previous calendars are missing a couple months. You'd find calendars without January, February, and you'll find lunar solar calendars all over the place. Even in even the Jewish calendar is a lunar solar calendar. But for some reason, in the Gregorian calendar came out in the 16th century and banned lunar solar, messed up all the calendar dates, month, day numbers, making them arbitrary, 28 days, 29, 30, 31, messing up the names, giving them all kinds of names based on their version of history, their exalted figures, Julius, Octavius, Augustus, Caesar, who takes up all 3 months for some reason. And I'll get into the reasons later, but it's just, you know, you can see how redaction happened later in history. It just took all of this knowledge away, and we don't even understand where the names of the days come from anymore, the names of the months, where they come from, because they've all been changed. We still have the days of the week, of course, and all of them are, of course, named after planets. So you can see how some of that culture never really went away.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
So let's move ahead. Venus, after the Exodus event, was, like I said, the dragon in the sky, streaking across the sky, not hard rock at all. And in Chinese mythology, the dragon is regarded as its most holy figure. Well, one of the most holy. In many of its paintings, always regarding the sun. You can see in these pictures here, the dragon regarding the sun. So what happened there? In this moment, 1442 BCE, not long after, Venus is trying to find its final orbit. It's full of energy, and it's trying to match its energy plane closer to the sun, which has more energy too. And it's falling towards the sun, at which point it reaches its current orbit where it's at right today and just stops. And that's what's seen in this picture. The dragon just stops when it approaches the sun. Icarus is another version of that story. Icarus gets too close to the sun and just dissolves into what it is now. Icarus dies or gets burned. And what's really happening here is that in our electric universe, we're seeing a state change from one state level to another for a planet. This happens in atomic physics. When electrons change state, it can only happen with a giant release or intake of energy to push them from one state, from one orbit to the next. And our orbits and solar systems are exactly the same. They're electric orbits. Newton was wrong. Everyone back in those days said so. And Einstein's wrong too, because he never really improved on Newtonian theory, which could not answer any of these contradictions in our observed solar system. But electric universe makes this all very clear. It's just like an atom. It's not orbits of planets. It's energy planes. And every planet is stuck in its energy plane, wobbling back and forth in a tiny gravity caused by that plane. And as Venus found its plane, it finally stopped and just got stuck in its final orbit. So in 1442, we got this crazy story where Joshua makes it to Israel, and then God appears and he says, don't worry, I'm going to help you kill all these Philistines. And Joshua's like, how can you help? And God's like, well, here are the 50 kings that I've killed before. And that's 50 kings in the Joshua Old Testament. It's just ridiculous. Kind of mean-spirited narrative that really, it reflects the imagination of the writers and has nothing to do with the religions that this stuff came from. But yeah, there was this moment when the sun stood still for Joshua during a battle. Now, Joshua, to my interpretation, Yeshua, shares the same letters as Jesus, by the way, is simply the name of the Savior. That's what Yeshua means, Savior. And the Savior was Venus. Joshua was Venus. and by streaking across the sky, Venus led the slaves, all of us here on Earth, the humans, who were enslaved by that pyramidal empire, into a promised land, which just happened to be the same place, Earth. It wasn't, we didn't have to go anywhere. And here's a really interesting tidbit. Sigmund Freud, 1920, he got really unpopular from his own followers when he claimed that his interpretation of the Exodus story makes the Jews, the Israelites, I should say, of the Old Testament, actually the masters of the Egyptian Empire, not the slaves at all. The priest class, actually, which isn't all that surprising. And he got in big trouble for saying that. But that appears to be the real story, the one where the powers that be, the Catholic Church, the deep state, whatever you want to call them, who redacted all these stories, had to place themselves as the victims in the center of the story and the chosen people, and the only one that God's saving as everyone else is dying in these stories. And that's where the redaction is. But if you, like I say, go to Africa, you find a pure version of the story where the priest class had to be the ones leaving the pyramids. And because of simple reason, the pyramids no longer functions. The planets all separate out into their final orbits, and there wasn't tremendous energy passing through them anymore. Now we just have the energy we see in our North Pole, just enough to cause those aurora borealis lights, yep. Very pretty. But no more, the pyramids no longer function. And the only people who would ever stay in the pyramids are the slaves, the ones who were maintaining them the whole time and lived right outside them and still believed in all the gods. They had no reason to stop worshiping all those idols that were there. So Egyptian pyramidal empire lasts all the way up until Napoleon finds them in the 19th century, still having a pharaoh even. And I won't get that far ahead, but you can see how the monotheists, the Catholics and the Protestants too, and the Jesuits, all those guys simply got all of these stories wrong because they had to be the victims when in fact they were the perpetrators of the empires and the Satan worshiping, I'll say, and the sacrifice of humans and animals, all that crap that they're behind. They wanted to say that was pagan and we're the victims. That this is typical of people to lie in a way that protects themselves. And that's exactly what they did.
I recently did an episode with somebody talking about basically Solomon kind of going through all the temples and everything like that. And right. Honestly, kind of somewhat came to the same conclusion too, that there's all of this ancient mysticism that's based in the religion, but it kind of gets separated at a certain point. It gets looked at as like paganistic.
Exactly. Opportunistically, you know, they'll hate on something for 200 years. The Catholic Church, for example, would not say the name of Jesus for 200 years after he existed. And then it became their central icon till today. So, I mean, that's exactly how they play things, just opportunistically. If they need to completely contradict themselves, they will. And it's, history is full of their errors, as you say. Fomienko was clear when he pointed out these are simply errors. These errors of redaction, errors of duplication, people finding ancient texts and misunderstanding what they are. For example, if you have a major event, like the crucifixion story, a major event that affects all the regions, east and west, you're going to have 2-3 versions of the story, especially if it turns out to be this huge lasting story of 100 years. You're going to have different names for the characters, like Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. He's going to have different name in different places. And so did Jesus, who was also known as Alexander and Julius Caesar, and the first of the three kings who visited him as a baby. And all these contradictions exist now, as Fomienko pointed out, mathematically, of all things, simply because these deep staters were trying to figure out a way to use these religions to ascertain immense amount of power. It's not very hard to imagine why they would do that. All it's hard to imagine is that they were in a position where they actually could do that. Was the Catholic Church in a position to redact all of our media, everything, you know, music, mathematics and science? Well, actually, yes, they were. And the proof is right there in the sciences. If you look at all of our health sciences and anatomy of animals, anthropology, of course, you will find Latin everywhere, Latin, even though most of our human history and history of invention occurred in places where Latin did not exist, like in the 800 years of the Islamic Golden Age, which is not controversial at all, where almost all of this stuff was invented once, none of those things were written in Latin back then. And the people who did write in Latin came late in the 19th century, later on in the 19th century, in places like England, like the 16th century Gutenberg Bible, for example, was all written in Latin when no one in England even wrote Latin. Then later on, they redacted everything else. They started with the Bible and they got to everything else, even math, like I said, and the metric system. And this whole other alternate version, this other language that seems so alien to this planet, that I actually ended up having to come to the conclusion that Latin might actually be alien. And when I say alien, I'm only talking about Mars, just right over there, next planet over, the planet that shares a human history with us, according to the Saturnian cosmology, the place where Atlantis existed, where there's a bunch of giants that came from the southern hemisphere of Mars, where in the Iliad, for example, the Trojan War has references to the giants who came from Mars fighting in the war. You know, they're just talking openly about these creatures because they remembered them in human history. And in fact, giant humans existed throughout human history and has been redacted throughout his human history. And the redactions left behind are obvious, like really obvious, like tall tales, for example. The word tall used to mean height. Now it means both height and lies or fake. But actually in America, there's a bunch of literature showing that we had giants here. And there's no reason to just doubt that now. We had the Smithsonian Museum and their project that was very active in the 19th century, destroying every single giant mound they could find and hiding all the history. And maybe that's the reason why people don't believe in it today, because it's all been erased and destroyed. But ultimately, if they look at what hasn't been left behind, there is so much evidence left behind that there has been giants. If you go to Europe, there's giant doors and giant buildings. I mean, doors literally made for humans that are three times taller than you and me.
I mean, you got the giant sarcophaguses in Egypt too. And exactly. Yeah, I mean, even connecting in with more of the giant stuff too. I mean, almost every single culture talks about them, like you'd mentioned. So right. It's one of those things that's almost like undeniable at this point. And supposedly, I've heard there's actually a few museums down in South America that actually still have on display some giant skeletons. But I know a lot of podcasters have been talking about that the past few years, so I wouldn't be surprised if that's scrubbed out now. But supposedly, they still existed down in South America.
Yeah, exactly. And there's even some film, I think, of giants in Japan prior to World War II, that they were wiped out. We wiped them out by going from island to island and burning every single hole and hiding place. You have to wonder why we did that. It's like excessive a little bit, right? Just for that Pearl Harbor, which might have even been a false flag event. That was not just to subjugate the Japanese Empire, which was totally vassal to England and well within the West control. That was to eliminate giants. And we've been eliminating giants for a long time. England, for example, has castles all over it. And anyone that knows anything about medieval warfare knows that castles don't work. They just don't work. They're way too easily sieged. They you cut off the supplies, people starve within weeks. They don't have any place to put their crap. You know, it's terrible. So giants were not made for humans to fight humans. They're made for humans to fight giants. And England wiped out all its giants in its early literature, era history. And then in its literature, it made sure everyone hated giants. Like The Hobbit, you know, there's three evil ogres that are going to boil the protagonist alive of all things. And they're constantly regarded as evil in other literature, like Jack and the Beanstalk, for example. You know, the Beanstalk myth, for example, is very well understood in Saturnian cosmology. You got the stalk, which is the tree of life stretching up into the sky, and you climb it because it's a quantum teleport, a natural forming one back in the Golden Age, and you get to this place where there's giants, and they're eating giant food and stuff. I mean, it's just a real story. Jack and the Beanstalk and the Mickey and the Beanstalk redaction that came later. It's just that we can't possibly understand these things today.
I mean, even going into Scandinavia too, I mean, look at all the troll lore. It's up being mountain size, you know, becoming part of the mountains and stuff as they died. Like that, it completely fits into the giant motif too. Absolutely. Just different wording.
So let's go back to the timeline. In 800 BCE to 687, we had the formation of all the first cathedrals. And the cathedrals were different from the pyramids because of their shape. The cathedrals had spires on them. And And the word cathode exists in cathedral for that reason, because a spire is what you see at the end of a cathode, or an anode, anything that conducts electricity, because it's most efficient to conduct electricity to a fine point and then transmit it through the air. It's just something they discovered a long time ago. So how did they discover it, and why did they create cathedrals for it? This also solves another riddle of why churches are remembered as sanctuaries, when at no time in human history have they ever been sanctuaries of any kind. Not during the Crusades, and not during modern times, and just not at all. But during these periods of cataclysm, we had the planet Mars. It's still in close proximity with the Earth, and it was making 9 cataclysmic intervals over a period of 120 years. It'd get really close to Earth, its atmosphere at the outer ring of Mars would break to pieces and crash onto the Earth, and then the pieces would form back onto Mars as an outer ring. In Greek mythology, they saw that Prometheus was the god who gave humans the technology of the gods, literally technology that the deep state / church had told them is forbidden. Only they were authorized to use technology based on the first commandment, the first commandment. The way they implemented that one was, if you worship the Old Testament God and you follow the authority given to the priests, who then create technology, money, health technology and stuff, even the kind of technologies that used to exist that don't exist anymore, where you can heal people by touching them, and you can touch the giant gold altars and get healed that way. These are all technologies. And the priests said that only they had the authority by God to use technology. So when this event happened and humans on Earth built these cathedrals just by placing rocks on each other and hiding under the rocks, knowing that, observing that the electricity passes over and does not go into the rocks, does go into caves, can't hide in caves, but it doesn't go into contained environments, which are known today as Faraday cages, where the inside of the cage is protected from the electronic charge on the outside of it. And by discovering this naturally, and by building these cathedrals naturally, the humans discovered everything they need to know about technology, period. And I mean period. I don't mean that there's anything missing, like modern technology, microchips and airplanes and stuff. That's not technology to me. All of that stuff's usury, metered, for-profit, and I'm talking about something entirely different. Back then in the early years of human history, when the planet cataclysm is finally dying down and the humans are confident enough to go out and start building cities. Why didn't they build cities? Well, let me go back a little bit here. There was these cities of the plain, remembered in the Bible, that were completely destroyed, Sodom and Gomorrah and 2 others, and nobody knew why. And the priests, of course, with their dim view of everything, said, well, it's because you guys are being too promiscuous. You know, we told you not to have sex and stuff. And so no one knew why those cities were destroyed, and the priests told everyone it's because everyone was having sex, sodomy. And they coined the term sodomy from this event. But what's more likely that happened was it was simply an interplanetary alignment, a small one between the 3 rock planets, churning a tremendous amount of energy through them momentarily and utterly destroying these cities. So this happened back in 167 BCE. And it's only up until the modern times in 687 BCE are humans finally confident that the planet gods are not going to smash to bits every last one of their creations. All of their stories of creation all ended in ruin. Even the first creation story of the Tower of Babel, which was again that collinear configuration, Tree of Life, Tree of Yggdrasil, they all saw that come apart and destroyed by the gods. So it took a long time for humans to want to build cities. But when they finally did, they built the most remarkable cities on Earth. They are free energy cities, where if you look at their patterns today, they look like microchip boards. Sorry, not microchip boards, but just circuit boards, the way they're spaced out. Even those tombs found in Egypt look like circuit boards. I don't have a picture handy somewhere in my repository, but it's uncanny. We do that with circuit boards today to balance out the energy flowing on the surface of the board. if you've ever done embedded circuitry, you'll know that too much energy in one location will actually discharge your whole board. It will just simply not function. So you've got to have to balance where the energy is going with capacitors. And that means you're basically going to line everything in a optimal arrangement. And that's exactly what we find with all the first ancient cities of Earth. Optimal circle shapes with water flowing through them in between the houses and the neighborhoods. Energy flowing in the water enough to light lights, enough to be healthy and just, you know, go bathe in the water and you will never be sick. Stuff like that. And for that reason, I say that was a technology. Because technology means knowledge given to humans, like Prometheus did. It doesn't mean what we have today, where everything's wrapped up in intellectual property contracts and suppressed by governments and mocked and ridiculed, you know, to the point people don't believe in it anymore. And so that's my point. It was harmony and it was evolution back then. Humans create everything that they ever would invent. Alchemy was a big deal. They discovered that alchemy was demonstrated to them in primordial times. The phosphorus dropping down from Mars and the mercury coming from Mercury, which, yes, is named after the metal, because pools of liquid metal fell onto the Earth's surface on the southern hemisphere and just created pools of mercury in the ground. And for the philosophers, the ones who bothered collecting these things, the wizards of the time, had whenever they could combine mercury and phosphorus, they would create the element of gold and silver, with red phosphorus creating gold and white phosphorus creating silver. Now, this is a big secret today, a huge secret, because as they teach us in school, gold is supposed to be a periodic element. It's supposed to be an atom, silver too, along with a series of other precious elements. And because they're constantly called precious elements as an official title and backed by science, these elements are actually worth that much in the market and have been since the gold, you know, rush in England in the 17th century. The merchant rush, which started looking for gold everywhere. And they started appraising it and stuff. In reality, gold and silver can be created using mercury and phosphorus, dropping its value to nothing. And if that knowledge would come out today, it would entirely destroy the financial system that we've had, which was originally gold-backed. In many places, is still attempting to be gold-backed now. Diamonds are the same story. They're slowly realizing that diamonds are not forever. You know, they could be manufactured and destroyed. And gold is now finally being proven can be destroyed, not a periodic element. Periodic elements cannot be destroyed officially except for by atomic radiation expiration. That's what they taught us in school. So, like I said, all this 90s pop sci stuff has really been challenged since. It's not stood up to challenges, and it's come apart in modern times. And it's due to be completely replaced by something that can explain all of the history, all the contradictions, without leaving new contradictions and new mysteries and new magic for a new priest class to evolve, new specializations, and bring us right into the mess that we find ourselves in today. of course, when Fomienko announced this in the 90s, this new chronology, and he described all the stuff in it, he wasn't doing it for political reasons or to create a new religion or to promote a sense of harmony among the people. But that's exactly what I got when I read his new chronology. I said to myself, wow, this is not what they were telling us this whole time. Not just in school, but in everywhere you look, they tell us that human nature is warlike and that we have 100,000 years of anthropological history of constant warfare. And if you play video games, Age of Empires, Civilization. If you play any of these games, which, by the way, have been given for free to schools, you know, in the 90s, I saw big stacks of Civilization in the Jewish school where I worked. They're given the school to kids for free, these games where you know, you just build up armies and you slaughter each other. And it's like, well, apparently that they want to instill at an educational level the reality that this actually happened to children. And they do the exact same thing with dinosaurs. You know, they try to make dinosaurs cool for children when, believe me, they wouldn't give a crap if we hadn't made it, you know, put up all the music and bright colors and stuff. And we don't even know why kids like dinosaurs. In fact, there's a whole psychological debate to have there. If you ask me, whether or not I liked dinosaurs as a kid. I would say, I don't even know why, but I saw a bunch of pictures of dinosaurs ripping each other to shreds, blood everywhere, you know, just like in Jurassic Park, like in the movie. And since then, I guess I had a fascination. Well, that's not really liking dinosaurs, is it? That's sort of like PTSD. So that's what they do to children. They give them war and blood and violence, even in church. What's the first thing that Christians learn in church? Crucifixion. It's horrible. You know, you're attacking children at their psyche level when it's really fragile at an early development stage. And you're saying, I want you to think about this horrible thing, you know, like for days and weeks. And the most inspired of us, you know, we get obsessed. We get sort of a little insane about it. And the average person just gets scared away from it and just doesn't even want to think about religion or whether or not evolution is true. They just defer it all to scientists for that reason. So, as I said, there was these alternate histories available as recently as the 90s. And instead of having the impact that they should have had, they sort of were ignored automatically by the powers that be, that said that there was nothing to them. It must have just been like Russian propaganda or something in the end. And there's a picture of Fomenko. Like I said, he's just hired by the USSR to do this at a time when the USSR was being pushed during the Cold War by the West to basically cripple its own history and just become another vassal European state in the Union. And they realized this and they said, we got to get our history back. So they started hiring people and saying, like mathematicians, and sending them to the Kremlin, a religious site, and saying, please study our history.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
And so USSR fell apart for due to nefarious reasons. The West, you know, is very tricky. And Fomenko was forgotten. But he did publish his books, continued to publish a series of books and a bunch of videos. And I highly recommend you guys check these out. His theory is also known as the Phantom Time Hypothesis. Well, let me mute that. And in this hypothesis, Fomenko demonstrates very clearly, oh, I thought I'd get a full screen, that 1,000 years has been added to the modern timeline. Almost exactly 1,000, it's about 1,053, because that deep state church that set up the Gregorian calendar literally got to set the timeline anywhere they wanted. They set the ancient BC dates, they decided 1492 in the past, and they set the current time, which they said was sometime in the 12th century, as year zero. Setting a bunch of future dates, including the 1492 planned event, which was remembered as the apocalypse in the Bible. This was a planned event that happened in Europe in 1492, and it's really striking that the Exodus and the apocalypse in modern history both occur on this date. It's not a coincidence. Again, this is because if you have the ability to set the calendar and manipulate the dates however you want, then you can actually line up a new calendar in the future of all of the dates that happened in the past when that ancient empire, deep state empire, systematically lost all of its power from one event to the next until all of its power was gone. They wanted that power back, and they had no real way to do it, no big plan, so they knew it would take hundreds of years. So they simply set the future calendar with dates where they're planning to do certain things. And they plan to get all of the power that they lost in the Egyptian Exodus event back in the 1492 apocalypse event. I'll get into that event another time because modern human history is just huge and long and complicated too, and it's very fascinating in my opinion. But I'll just kind of stop it there. Point is, the 1,000 years was added to the timeline, and Fomenko demonstrated exactly how this happened. It's very simple, actually, the explanation. It's the Catholic Church, in its inception, hated the Christian Revolution. Just like the Jews in the New Testament saw Christ and the other person that they let go, Barbaros, as revolutionaries and threats to their entire authority system, including money. You know, you threaten the banks and they send, you know, goons after you.
Of course.
So, the church, you know, hated Christ and hated the empire that he created, which is the Tatarian Empire, created around him, I should say. all these events more or less happened around him. He wasn't really that active himself as a person. And like I said, it's very complicated. I'll get into another time, but because they denied him, they were able to redact later, it, almost by coincidence, but not really, this whole 1,000-year period. How they do that? The Cyrillic Bible and all the Cyrillic ancient texts from the Russian Tatarian Empire wrote down the years as in the year of our Lord. And they weren't talking about Christ. They were talking about the Lord, Sun. Everyone was a pagan sun worshiper back then. And it wasn't for 1,000 years, it wasn't for many hundreds of years later that the sun worshiping was redacted into Christianity and merged with the human figure of Christ, who wasn't magical at all, but suddenly had all these attributes, walking on water, healing the lepers, you know, stopping the clouds, the storms. I can go on all day. And actually, this is just sun worship. So back to the point, because the church that would form later denied Christ for 200 years, and then later on they took over, subsumed all that Christianity through warfare and crusades, they were in a position to decide what that I in the years meant. It was always an I and then the year date. I like 300 AD, that kind of thing. And I stood for Lord, in the year of our Lord. And the Catholic Church decided, no, that's a one. That's 1,300 AD. That's it. That's as simple as the trick was. And Fomienko points it out, it was a 1,000-year gap in our history, not 300 years or some trivial amount like that. And that the entire Roman Empire, the entire Spanish and French and British Empire, as we remember them today, and the Ottomans, are actually all just splinters of the Russian Tatarian Empire. And the only reason that we think any of these royalties are not connected back to the Russian royalties and intermarried, like the British are completely paranoid of the idea that they have Russian blood in their royalty, is because this empire has been erased from history, and maybe we'll get into another time, erased from the surface as well. If you look at where the Russian Tatarian Empire used to be, according to these Russian maps, what Siberia is today, you'll see that it's just a giant wasteland. There's no monuments of any kind. And south of Siberia is the Tibetan Peninsula, another huge, massive wasteland, which looks like a lightning scar of all things. It looks like the earth sort of just got molten and just pushed up and then pushed down into India and created those Himalayan mountains and just sort of froze in place as the Himalayans right there in front of India, erasing Shangri-La and all of these ancient Indian cities, which also fell into myth. You know, see, it all kind of adds up. The stories that they give us of the earth that, you know, happened over billions of years come up with a lot of contradictions to explain these monuments, these natural monuments, like the Himalayan mountains, for example. They say that, you know, a subcontinent pushed underneath another continent and pushed all these Himalayan mountains down into India or up from India or something. I mean, really elaborate, confusing, and contradictory, and poorly, very, you can't simulate it, so poorly thought out, not much causality behind it. And, you know, we have to start looking at the possibility that these redactions are nothing more than the best lies that they could possibly come up with, as they totally erased our real history from us. And then finally, why did they do all this? If you erase the past, you control the present, and if you control the present, you control the future. And there's another way that goes too, but it's that simple. If you want to rule Earth, you have to rule history and everyone's knowledge of history. And if you do that, you can force us to repeat history. They're doing it right now, trying to get us into World War III. World War III is nothing more than an attempt to destroy and contain Russia. World War II was an attempt to destroy and contain Russia. And we joined up with the Nazis and the Japanese. And then when Hitler failed in Moscow, we attacked the Germans and we attacked the Japanese, and we just made up this whole story about how they were the enemy instead and Russia was now our ally. I mean, this is all just to destroy and contain Russia. World War One, entangling alliances, all for the purposes of making all the countries allied to Russia be attacked so that Russia becomes contained. Russia lost a great deal of territory in World War One. And then one last war I'll mention, World War Zero, which is 1812 war, which, you know, happened in Russia and also happened in Americas at the exact same time. Historians like to say it's not a world war, but spanning the world, So in that war, the French tried to destroy Russia. They lost 600,000 troops trying to do it. And the Russians actually burned the Kremlin to the ground in an attempt to save all of their holy documents, their religious documents. And it's for that reason, and only for that reason, that they were able to reconstruct any of this new chronology or the maps or any of that stuff. In that Napoleonic War, they saved it. They saved the books from burning. And everywhere else on Earth, in all of human history, has the books have always been burned. Every library, you know, Alexandria and Egypt, even the ones in London, in the Great Fire, you know, every other reference to ancient history has been destroyed except for Russia. And it's for that reason that Russia remains the threat to the Western hegemony today.
Wow, man, that went deep, and I wasn't expecting where that conversation was going to go, but I already know what I want to talk about next time. We got to get into the modern stuff, but this was perfect that you laid down basically the whole background history leading up to that point, and yeah, we definitely got to be able to cover the modern history.
Anytime, yeah, I'd love to do that.
And I got to give you big props on your research, man. You've really put this stuff together. You had a really good way of displaying it, and you did a really good step-by-step for it. That's why in the middle of it, man, I had no questions. You had a really good way of portraying it, too.
Excellent. Glad to hear that. And I've been practicing a lot. Just these podcasts have actually been very helpful.
Oh, man, you're welcome on the show anytime. Like, researchers like you, man, that cover stuff as deep as you do. Like, I love this kind of stuff, man. And, of course, laying down the groundwork a bit this time. Next time we can do the modern stuff. Then maybe we can come back for a third time and we can kind of bounce ideas a little bit back and forth off each other. But you got so much work, man. I just want to sit back and just hear everything that you got to take in, man.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
And we are back, so let's hop right in. But I always like to kind of wrap up the show with words of wisdom from the guests to the listeners. So if there's any words of wisdom that you might want to bestow on the listeners, what might it be?
Jeez, wasn't ready for that. Be optimistic. This is an extremely cynical time, probably the most cynical time in all of human history, you know, the most slavery, the most poverty, the most misery. And it seems like it's never going to get better. But I have this feeling that not only is it about to get a lot better, but it's going to be what I call the slingshot, where it's been pulled back for so long, our entire lives. This is everything, all the potential of our species has been simply suspended. And there's going to have to be this moment when we start doing the things that we're always meant to do. And, you know, hang in there and look forward to this moment, because it's definitely coming soon, and within our lifetime and probably within the next couple of years. That's my guess.
Oh, man, I could definitely agree with that. And I've been talking about that for a long time, that everybody is fully aware of the fact that we're not living how we're intended to live. That's why we have all of this mental illness and everything else that's going on nowadays. And it's only a matter of time. And I usually use the reference from Hunter S. Thompson about the wave hitting the break wall and eventually coming back. But same concept, same idea.
Yep, I love that book and movie.
And if anybody wants to come and find all of your research or your deep dives, the entire website that you just went through, for any of the audio listeners that want to get all the visuals that you were showing during the presentation, where can everybody come and find you, and where can they come and find your website at?
You can just find my website at paradigmthreat.net, and my social media links are on there too, if you want to see me on Instagram or Facebook. though, like I said earlier, you know, I'm mostly censored on those networks. So all of my stuff I put on my website, and that's the point. Can't censor your own website.
That's like with a lot of podcasters with the RSS things. Yeah. You can take us on one platform, but we'll be on three other ones still.
Exactly. There's a lot of stuff I didn't want to lose. So that's why I started a big collection.
Smart way of doing it, man. And for all the listeners out there, I will make sure that I include that link down in the show description. Highly recommend going and digging through his website. I know he only went through a little bit of it on that website, but if all your other research is as extensive as what you just went through, man, I can only imagine what kind of gold is on your website.
Nice. I appreciate it.
And I appreciate you making the time to come on today, man. Really, really looking forward to next time. We'll have to make sure that we set that up for relatively soon because I want to do these ones somewhat close to each other. And then we can kind of go from there, man. But again, big props for all of your research, all the deep dives that you've done. Very extensive, very well done.
Really appreciate it.
If anyone is interested in being a guest on the show, having me as a guest on your show, sponsoring the show, or getting a hold of me for any reason whatsoever, you guys can get a hold of me through email, which is increaseofourrealitypodcast@outlook.com, or through social media, Instagram or Facebook. Instagram is the one that I am the most active on, of course. Or you guys can get a hold of me through the submission forms, which are available on the link tree. And if anybody is interested in podcast or audiobook production services, you guys can shoot me a message through Open Minds Media. The link tree for that is available down in the show description also. And every single thing that I mentioned throughout the entire show is available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.